Here's influencing education.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, for the first time, people interested in healthcare will be gathering here in Florida for a conference on how to fix our nation's healthcare problems. The conference takes place February 16th and 17th in South Florida. We're going to be speaking with one of the organizers of the conference in a moment. And later, we'll hear an interesting historical comparison about Donald Trump and a figure from America's past. And we'll also open up the phone lines later in the show. But first, President Trump has promised to repeal and replace Obamacare with a new healthcare system that covers everyone and costs less than the current system. So far, the president has not offered a plan. Currently, Americans pay more per capita than any other nation on earth for healthcare, yet millions of people still fall through the cracks. They're not covered by insurance and don't have a primary care physician. When they need health care, they often start with the emergency room or a walk-in clinic. Obamacare allowed more people to get private health insurance or Medicaid, but some activists say it's still unconscionable that with a nation as wealthy as the U.S., we still have people without health insurance or who are going bankrupt because they can't afford health care. The First Florida Healthcare Summit wants to create a path toward universal health care here in Florida, and that summit begins Friday, February 16th in West Palm Beach. One of the main organizers of this First Florida Healthcare Summit is Michael Leidy. Michael is the Director of Public Policy for National Nurses United, where he's worked since its founding in 2009, and he's worked for the California Nurses Association since 1994. I spoke with him yesterday about the healthcare summit and what his group is planning to try to provide universal healthcare for the U.S. Michael Leidy, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Rob. It's my pleasure.
So, Michael, you're the public policy director for the National Nurses United. What is National Nurses United?
We are the largest organization of registered nurses in the United States. We have over 150,000 members, including, I think, about 8,000 members in Florida. And so we are one of the most active organizations fighting for Medicare for All, for safe staffing in hospitals, and are really leading the effort as patient advocates for a better healthcare system in the U.S.
Let's talk about Medicare for All for a second. Medicare for All, that means that everybody would be embraced by the Medicare program?
That's right. It's an improved version of the program, Rob, because there are certain aspects of it that have, over the years, been privatized or the benefit reduced. So, for example, seniors in some cases are paying as much as 40% of their Social Security checks. So we're talking about an improved Medicare for All that eliminates those deductibles and co-pays and premiums that we pay that would cover everybody. Comprehensive benefits, everybody in, nobody out, and would eliminate those insurance costs that are so devastating to so many families now.
Now, what would that cost the federal government? How big of a budget would you have if we had Medicare for All with no copays?
Well, we do think that we could expand the program, improve it to cover everybody for about a trillion point two. And so it's not a small number, of course, but when you look at the overall healthcare system, we're spending nearly around $3 trillion overall. 60% of that funding is already coming from taxpayers. So we have a mostly publicly funded system, but we're not getting our money's worth. We could increase the payroll tax that we're currently paying into Medicare. We all pay it. It's an earned benefit that we have. We could increase that payroll tax and then cover everybody and secure the program for seniors, which, of course, do end up spending the most on health care. And so if we put everybody in one pool, we can spread out the costs and cover everybody.
Now, for a lot of people, either their employer or they pay out of their pocket for health insurance, and it's always a big number. If you pay out of pocket or your employer pays, it's thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars every year. So you're saying that you would trade those payments for private insurance for maybe a higher payroll tax. So there would no longer be that cost to your employer or yourself if you're self-employed for health insurance.
That's right. We would replace those premiums and copays, deductibles, with a payroll tax, just as you say, Rob. And you're right. Those are big numbers. The largest employers generally have the best plans and the lowest cost. Their average premium is $14,000 a year, with workers in those companies paying an out-of-pocket cost average of $4,400. That's almost $19,000 per person in the U.S. for health insurance, and then we find that about 30% of those folks are underinsured because the deductible is so high, maybe $2,000, they can't actually use their insurance to get the care they need. So we have a huge problem of underinsurance that really is increasingly the heart of the problem, where people just can't get the care they need.
So, Michael, a lot of members of your group, the National Nurses United, are on the front lines. They see what happens when patients come into a hospital without health insurance. Can you describe what some of the downside is when folks don't have health insurance or have a high deductible and go into a hospital or see a doctor for treatment?
Sure. What we find is we have over two-thirds of Americans, by the time they reach 65, have two or more chronic conditions, and that's because they haven't gotten treatment. So the best really way and only way to really relieve the pain and suffering of chronic conditions is early treatment, and that's what our members see, is that they see treatment deferred. You'll have diabetics who aren't able to get insulin, and so they'll come in, present with blood sugars 400 or 500 ratings for their blood sugar levels, which is, you know, astronomical. It shouldn't be higher than 90. You see folks coming in, 27% of people report that they postpone care. Our nurses see folks who come in, they cut their pills in half. We see folks who are not, we had just a horrific story told by one of our nurses who works in the neonatal intensive care unit. So these are the sickest of the newborns, often premature. She was able to stabilize a child after a premature birth, sent the child home with her parents, but the parents were not able to afford the medical equipment and assistance they needed, so the baby came back unconscious and passed away because that she wasn't able to get the treatment she needed at home. Again, her parents had insurance but didn't cover those expenses. So it's precisely those kinds of things that we see over and over again. Kids with asthma who can't stay out of the hospital because they don't have an inhaler readily accessible. It's quite, I think if folks really understood, it's quite devastating, the human suffering that occurs simply for lack of health insurance.
We're talking with Michael Leidy. He's the Director of Public Policy for National Nurses United and the California Nurses Association, and this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. So essentially you're talking about a Canadian system. Are the outcomes better? Are the outcomes better when you have a system of single payer for all or Medicare for all? Are people healthier in Canada than they are in the U.S.?
They are, actually. And they're healthier in Norway as well, which has a single payer system. They have better outcomes in Australia, which has a single payer system. What's remarkable, Rob, is you look at the different healthcare systems around the world, and those that have the greatest level of public funding, that have the greatest level of public commitment to health and health security, have the best outcomes. So the system that is number one rated in the world is like our Veterans Administration, where the nurses and doctors are employed by the government. That's the case in the United Kingdom. That's the number one healthcare system in the world. So, and the other high-ranking ones that are single payer are Australia and Norway. Even in Canada, which is relatively underfunded compared to some of the other national systems, you have better outcomes than in the U.S. I know a lot of people talk about, oh, aren't you just going to ration care? You know, aren't you just going to have to wait forever to get treatment? Well, two things. One is the wait times in the U.S. for a specialist are similar, if not longer in some cases, than Canada. It can typically take 6 weeks to get into a specialist in the United States. Secondly, because people cannot afford the care they need, and because these deductibles and copays are so high, we are rationing care by affordability in the U.S. You get all the care you can afford. If you can't afford it, you don't get it. And so every healthcare system makes decisions about what treatments are approved. The question is it going to be democratic? Is it going to be popular? Controlled, like Medicare does that in a very efficient way and keeps doctors and nurses in charge. Those of us with private insurance, we're at the mercy of those bureaucrats and bean counters who are either not authorizing treatments, denying them, and then we have to fight for them. So that model of private insurance denials and restrictions on access does not exist anywhere else in the world, and our outcomes suffer because of it.
And when you talk about comparing U.S. healthcare to that of the other developed nations around the world, our life expectancy is actually going in the wrong direction. Life expectancy is now decreasing here in the U.S., and infant mortality is worse than most other developed nations. Isn't that right?
It is. It's shocking. We've never seen that in the history of the developing world, where life expectancy reduces, and it's a direct result of our healthcare system. If 68% of Americans have two or more chronic conditions by the age of 65, that tells us we're not getting the healthcare we need. And you're right, infant mortality on the rise. It's surprising, but what we can see, Rob, is if you look at the healthcare disparities that exist in this country, based on socioeconomic status, based upon race, and based upon gender, those disparities account for the most of the difference in outcomes, life expectancy, infant mortality between the U.S. and other countries. But the only way to address those disparities is to establish a system where all of us get a single high-quality standard of safe therapeutic care. And if we don't have the same standard of care, we're not going to be able to eradicate these healthcare disparities. And when you have different private insurance or you have different public programs like Medicaid or CHIP for kids, not only do you have different benefits, you have different standards of care. And so we are going to ultimately have to address poverty, lack of affordable housing, inadequate nutrition to get at those socioeconomic determinants of health. But we also have to guarantee people get the health care they need and with a standard of care that is universal. And that's what we lack in this country.
Michael, have you looked at the numbers? I don't know if these numbers exist about, we've been talking about the benefits to humanity here, but I'm wondering about the benefits to business. Like, for instance, in Canada, because of their single-payer system, is it cheaper to build stuff in Canada than it is to build stuff in the U.S. because they don't have the high costs of health care in Canada?
Sure is. It costs $1,500 less per car to build it in Canada than in the U.S. All the auto manufacturers know the benefits of the Canadian system. They would adopt it in a heartbeat. You've also got the fact that there's a huge competitive advantage, not only in cars, but in manufacturing and in services. What's striking is that you'll hear conservative business owners in Canada will say they don't understand their American counterparts, why they wouldn't get out of the healthcare business and adopt this type of system. We've looked at this single-payer impact on businesses at the state level in California. It looks like businesses could save a third or a half of their payroll if they were to adopt a single-payer system. Typically, you could fund this for about 7% of payroll, where currently businesses who offer insurance are paying 15, 18% of payroll. It's a huge savings. You've also got the ability to move and shift those resources into growth and innovation from the savings. Government can save tens of billions of dollars, if not hundreds of billions at the national level. So we think these savings across the board are substantial.
We're talking with Michael Leidy. He's the Director of Public Policy for National Nurses United, and he'll be speaking in South Florida in a few days at a conference about single payer. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But Michael, the objection is, and you touched on this before, but the objection always is to single payer that Canadians come to the U.S. when they need serious health care. They don't get serious health care if they need it in Canada, that people from Canada are rushing over the border to get health care in the U.S., and that in Canada, and you did touch on this earlier, that health care is being rationed. And so if you need health care, you're going to have to wait for months or years before you get the health care that you need in Canada. Is that an accurate depiction of what's going on?
It's not. And you can tell because the most revered Canadian consistently in every survey is Tommy Douglas, who established their what they call Canadian Medicare, their national single-payer system. This is the most popular aspect of their society, is their national healthcare system. So this is something that Canadians take great pride in. It is true that elective surgery is going to be delayed in Canada. I think it's the opposite of the description you made. It's not that the least serious stuff you have to come to the U.S. for. It's the elective stuff. It's the stuff that the system has triaged and said, okay, there's some more urgent cases ahead of you. Those folks who are wealthy can just jump the line, go to the U.S. It is, in Canada, it's a provincial-based funding system, so it can vary, right? There might be fewer resources in Nova Scotia than there are in British Columbia, but overall, it does establish a level of fairness and access that we don't have in this country. And so really the question is, how are you going to make the determinations of who gets care when, right? That's called rationing. It's also called managing a healthcare system. And so in Canada, they've made those choices. In the U.S., we don't have to make those choices because we spend so much more now, Rob. It's really a matter of redirecting the monies we spend away from the marketing, profits, and administrative costs of the fragmented, inefficient system where money is the metric of everything. It's really more of an industry than a healthcare system. We need to eliminate those wastes and inefficiencies and profits, spend the money on care. We don't need to make the choices that they've made in Canada because we have sufficient resources to cover everybody if we spend the money more wisely.
That's the ironic thing. Remember Johns Hopkins University study that said a few years ago that said that we spend per capita about $8,000 per American on health care. Canada spends about somewhere around $4,000, yet Canada covers everybody with no deductions or no co-payments, rather, and we still leave out tens of millions of Americans from our health care system. Right now, I think about 30 million Americans don't have any sort of health insurance.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really the difference, Rob. And so it's not a question of we don't have to deny people care. We just have to deny the company's profits who are making that money
off
of
our stuff, right? That profit has to be enormous if we're spending so much more than Canada.
Oh, well, let me just one example. In California, the private health insurance companies between 2011 and 2016 made $27 billion.
Wow.
$27 billion in 5 years. Kaiser Permanente out here makes $1 billion a quarter. Stephen Helmsley, United Health, based in Minneapolis, made $66 million in 2016 as CEO of United Health. So there's plenty of money in the system. We spend $342 billion on tax subsidies to employers so they can buy private insurance. Without those subsidies, the insurance companies don't have a viable business model. So the question is, for American business, Floridian business, why are you paying all this money to a company that has no value and is just ripping us off?
Now,
you're making them money.
Last week, Jeff Bezos of Amazon and Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway and Jamie Dimon, one of the big bankers in the U.S., they came together and they said, we got a plan to solve the health crisis in the U.S. Do you trust that these three people will be able to come up with something new and better than what we have now?
No. The problem we have is an industry model. We have and Elizabeth Rosenthal, one of the foremost health journalists of our time, wrote a book, American Sickness, where she talks about this, where money is the metric of everything in medicine now, and the quality isn't that good. And we've gone from caregiving to an industry. And I don't think you put the titans of industry in charge of healthcare, you're going to have anything different. There's an emphasis on restricting access to care as a way to save money. There's an emphasis on managing access through, you know, again, high deductibles and copays or other mechanisms, gatekeeping, so you have to go through a primary care doctor to get to a specialist, or prior authorization so the treatment's approved in advance. All these things, everyone knows what the game is. And so you're either going to subsidize the purchase of private insurance, you're either going to employ healthcare workers directly by the government, or we're going to be on our own. And in this case, the employers, these CEOs want their companies to save money. Well, what that's meant mostly is a shift to workers so that the corporation bottom line stays stable or saves money, but workers are increasingly paying more and more of the cost. So I don't see where this formula changes when you put, you know, industry people in charge of what is unfortunately become an industry in healthcare.
Well, I always find it interesting that conservatives complain about government bureaucracy, but right now, as you point out, there's gatekeepers. And insurance company bureaucracy keeps us from healthcare. The insurance company functionaries, people without medical degrees, decide whether or not we can have certain kinds of treatment. I mean, that's a bureaucracy, but it's a bureaucracy that conservatives don't recognize.
That's right. You know what the least bureaucratic system is in healthcare? Medicare. Medicare is the least bureaucratic. It spends 5 or 6% on administration. The private insurance companies are spending 13% before their profits. You're 100% right, Rob. It's really funny to me because the entity in healthcare, the entity that's most efficient is the government. It's actually government across the board in healthcare that's most efficient. And it's ironic, but we're already publicly funding our healthcare system, I would think conservatives would join us in wanting to get our money's worth. The truth is, when we talk about Medicare for All, we're talking about not a radical reform, not some leftist crazy idea. The system remains mostly private, privately provided. Employers contribute, individuals contribute. Everyone has shared responsibility. We have a system where doctors and nurses are in charge. What's the system that does that the best? It's not United Health or Aetna or Cigna that does that. It's Medicare. Medicare puts doctors and nurses in charge. That's, again, what conservatives want. They want a doctor, you know, patient-centered healthcare system. Well, that's what we can provide. So and then you get business out of the healthcare business and into the business of growth and innovation and shifting those monies to wages and pensions instead of to the health insurance bureaucracy. I think we have a reform that should be appeal across the political spectrum. And fundamentally, what we're offering here is peace of mind, real health security. And I would speak to those conservative voters who say, hey, we're tired of this. Everyone gets a handout. Everyone gets a subsidy. Everyone gets something but me. Well, in this case, everybody is covered. Everybody contributes and everybody benefits. So there's no freeloaders here in Medicare for All. We're all in it together and we all contribute.
It's just like Social Security and Medicare for older people. This idea is not new. It does go back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the Truman administration. It kind of one part of the unfinished business of FDR.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there was a reason that FDR came up with this program, too. Again, Social Security, health security. You're exactly right. It's in that tradition of this is a way for us to protect each other, the common good, and also provide social productivity. Because if we're healthier, we're going to contribute to society. All those values that Roosevelt, I think, acted on, we think are really in the forefront of this fight for Medicare for All.
Michael, you're going to be speaking in South Florida in a few days. Tell us what's going on in South Florida in terms of an effort to try to create a single-payer movement here in the U.S.
Well, there's no state more important for health policy than Florida, and so it's really overdue that we have a gathering here. We're going to meet in West Palm Beach, the Florida Health Summit, bringing some of the best activists and thinkers from around the country, and also really bringing together those folks in Florida who have been working on this issue but haven't necessarily coalesced in as much as we could. And so National Nurses United, Progressive Democrats of America, others have come together to do the summit where we want to jumpstart it because, again, we're going to see a new alliance. We're going to see an alliance between seniors who want to protect Medicare, alliance of the uninsured who, because of the lack of Medicaid expansion, I think you still got about over 13% of Floridians uninsured, one of the highest rates in the country, 46th in the country, 46th lowest insured rate. So the crisis is real in Florida, and we think we can unite these constituencies and move the ball forward for Medicare for All. Because if we can move it forward in Florida, then it changes the whole national conversation.
What are the dates on the conference, and also how can people sign up? What's the website?
So the Florida Health Summit, you can just Google that and you'll get right there. And it is Friday the 16th and Saturday the 17th, goes a little bit into the 18th. So it's President's Day weekend down at the Embassy Suites in West Palm Beach for the Florida Health Summit.
Michael, I have a lot of cynical friends, and they tell me that the insurance companies are so powerful. You talk about the $26 billion that they made in profit in California. The insurance companies are so entrenched, and they have bought out so many members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, that they're not going to let this profit line go, because it would be a tremendous loss to insurance companies, that people cannot fight the insurance companies or the political donations they make to politicians of all stripes. What would you say?
Well, I think I read a good piece by political scientist James Monroe, who said mass changes in public opinion are not only possible, but that's what's worked in terms of changing social policy in the U.S. And he's right. And that's what we're engaged in. This is what's remarkable to me, Rob, is how far we have come. Virtually every pundit, every analyst, every nonprofit foundation, and obviously all the industry, they've got, healthcare industry's got three lobbyists for every member of Congress. Every one of those entities says, no, we can't do Medicare for All. No, this is unrealistic. It's, government-run healthcare. And now we have a majority of Americans, 53% in the latest poll, saying they want it. It's like 56% of doctors favor Medicare for All. So I would say what's remarkable is, given the huge amount of opposition, including among cynical liberals, in the liberal press, you don't really see promotion of Medicare for All. You're, oh, yeah, we should do that, but we can't, so here's what we should do instead, is much more typical. So I say, number one, we're taking on the insurance industry, and despite everything against us, I mean, we have majority support. Secondly, in California, the Democrats have a two-thirds majority in the legislature, a Democratic governor that's likely to continue. There is no reason why we cannot beat the insurance industry in California. And third, once we do it in a big state, then it becomes obviously possible nationally. But here's the bottom line. Business is not going to keep paying the exorbitant premiums and increases that the insurers are demanding. There is no control. No entity tells insurance companies, limit what you charge. No entity limits what prescription drug companies charge. No entity controls hospital rates. Without that price control, without that containing of costs, the whole system's going to collapse. And the only entity that has the leverage to actually contain those prices and costs is government through Medicare. It's the only thing that's worked so far. So to me, that's the ultimate bottom line. Business is not going to take it. There's going to be a restructuring. We're either going to have a type of Medicare for All, or we're all going to be on our own. Maybe we get a voucher. Maybe we get a subsidy from our employer. And that, I think, that alternative, once people understand the real choice between Medicare for All and an on-your-own healthcare system, then I think we're really going to be in a position to win. And in that model, the insurance companies are increasingly going to be less relevant. That's what we have to understand, the Bezos, Diamond, and Buffett proposal. That's what we have to see as the Aetna-CVS merger. Increasingly, insurance companies are either going to be part of larger systems, or their role is going to be diminished in favor of these alternative corporate consolidations.
And Michael, you're out there in California. How soon will the state assembly there in California take up the issue of possibly making California the first state in the nation to have a single-payer system?
That's right. Well, we're testifying. I'm testifying at a hearing on Wednesday. They've got a select committee on universal health care in the assembly. We're making every effort we can to get our bill to move through the regular Assembly Health Committee, and that's what we're going to try again on Wednesday. So we haven't given up. Rob, we think that we can still move this bill this year and get this started here in California.
Michael, that's all I was going to ask. Is there anything else that I should have asked you that you'd like to point out?
I think you've like scraped it all. I think I'm clean. I think.
Well, Michael,
that was great.
Michael, thank you so much. It's great to have you here from the National Nurses United and also the California Nurses Association. Thanks, and you'll be in South Florida, West Palm Beach, on February 16th.
Yes, I look forward to it, Rob, and really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Well, that was Michael Leidy, Director of Public Policy for National Nurses United. He's based in Northern California, and he's one of the speakers at the upcoming Florida Healthcare Summit. You can find that online at floridahealthcaresummit.org. And that summit takes place in West Palm Beach on Friday, February 16th, and Saturday, February 17th. And several groups, including the Communication Workers of America, and Public Citizen and Progressive Democrats of America, Florida Media Labs, National Nurses United, Our Revolution, and Social Security Works are sponsoring that event. So I'm going to read some of the emails and maybe take the phone call that's been hanging on for a long time to talk about this. But then I want to talk about an interesting comparison that somebody made on TV yesterday, comparing President Trump to somebody from America's past, that I think really resonates with me. We'll see what you think. 813-239-9663. Here's Jim in Plant City. Jim, I'm sorry that was in recorded interview, so you're not able to talk with Michael, but did you want to say something about the interview?
Yeah, this is Jeff in Plant City.
Oh, Jeff, well, okay.
We need, like a Me Too movement for healthcare. I mean, enable all of these social media accounts to take this on. You know, the reason we probably have the worst health care in the nation or close to it in Florida is because we have a governor like Rick Scott who basically, took all these profits from a health care company that he was running, and it made him a very rich man and screwed over a lot of other investors, including my father, who's, in the medical business, but working for Columbia HCA, received stock as compensation. But when that debacle happened, it all lost, and the only person that seemed like got money was Rick Scott. It's funny how insurance companies can have information like their actuarial tables, that actually determine how they price healthcare or any other insurance product for that matter. But they can classify that as proprietary information and keep it away from anybody that wants to find out, how and why that works. I felt good in the beginning when your guest, mentioned Norway. Maybe somebody can call the president and solve that conundrum for him, why we don't have more immigrants from Norway. But we have a system that basically enables these companies to take profits. And I was quite buoyed when I heard about these three titans of industry describing health insurance as a tapeworm. But then again, I was in my own conundrum saying, well, here's Warren Buffett, who talks about the insurance company that he controls through Berkshire Hathaway, is say, I like that because I get to use other people's money in a deny, delay, defend situation. But all of our health care is based on a shell game where, every year, oh, you have the right Medicare plan? Well, you need to look at this and you need to determine what you're going to need, like you have some kind of a crystal ball and you can say, well, I'm getting older, I better have this or that. But, they keep people off balance all the time, changing this, changing that, even in the kids program.
Well, Jeff, no doubt. I think healthcare is the issue, one of the big issues of our time. And that's why I spend so much time here on MNF, at least on my shows, talking about it. And Jeff, thanks a lot. Thanks for telling us what's,
event.
All right. Thanks for telling us about your dad, too. Let's go to Dave in Newport Richie. Dave, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, Rob, that's really interesting listening to that interview. I appreciate you putting that on. And I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking this is such an indictment of the Democratic Party that they can't find their voice on this issue.
Yeah, the Democrats are really split. There are some Democrats that want to see single payer, and there are some that are fighting against it. So the party is split.
It seems to me it has such potential to unite a voting bloc in this country, to kind of cut across a lot of the cultural and identity politics and really bring a majority to the vote. So powerful, and yet that party can't find its voice. It can't articulate the way that man just did. The reasons for doing this, you could bring business together, can bring people together on this issue, I think you could create a huge upswell support for a ticket that ran on this issue as a centerpiece, and yet they can't find their voice on it. It's just pathetic as an opposition party that the Democrats can't come together and see that this is such a winner.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thanks.
All right, great to hear from you. We'll see where the Democrats go on that issue. A lot of emails about this topic. David writes, one thing I keep hearing is a reason to keep the dysfunctional U.S. health insurance system the way it is now is that it secures jobs for people working for the insurance companies. Well, that's a very similar argument for keeping the status quo for our dysfunctional military system. If you close bases around the world, you put soldiers and contractors out of a job. I thought that the GOP promoted fiscal responsibility, but clearly they're hypocrites to keep such wasteful, expensive systems in place, writes David. Tony writes this, President Truman followed on President Roosevelt and tried to get universal health care coverage in 1948. At that time, the American Medical Association used the red boogeyman of socialized medicine to kill it. Now, even many doctors support Medicare for All. In our own time, it's big pharma, insurance companies, and the hospital chains that indeed own our Congress. That's Tony's email. For fun, go back and look at what Ronald Reagan said in the 1960s, early 1960s, about Medicare. Ronald Reagan would host these TV shows and talk about how horrible Medicare would be and would lead to an oppressive system. And you can see those videos all over YouTube. Mika in Bradenton says, healthcare should be a way of life, not an industry. If we could organize and boycott all health insurance companies, we would be free to install what we want to, writes Mika. I want to add two more topics to the possible things that we talk about. And here's our phone number again, 813-239-9663. Yesterday, the White House says President Trump has ordered the Pentagon to stage a giant military parade on the streets of Washington, D.C. What do you think about this idea? Here's a report from this morning from the Associated Press.
The White House says the president's told the military to start exploring a celebration that will let Americans show their appreciation for their troops. The president first brought up the idea of a parade while watching France's Bastille Day spectacle in July. The Washington Post reports he told Pentagon leaders last month he wanted a parade like that, with one defense official saying the cost of shipping tanks and other hardware here could run into the millions of dollars. Big military parades are common in authoritarian places like North Korea and China, but the U.S. has not often staged a showy display of military might. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Well, do you think that's a good idea? Do you agree with President Trump that we should have a big parade of military hardware and equipment in Washington, D.C.? What do you think? 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Should we do like the French and the old Soviet Union and North Korea? Should we put on one of those military parades? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Jeff Haynes is our phone producer today. I want to bring up one more topic, and that is this morning on CNN, Carl Bernstein, one of the two reporters from the Washington Post who broke the Watergate story and wrote that great book, All the President's Men, was on, and he was asked about President Trump. And I want you to listen to this and see what you think about this. Here's Carl Bernstein, the investigative reporter, this morning on CNN.
We cover new revelations in the Russia investigation seemingly every day. So where does the Russia investigation stand 1 year in? Let's ask CNN political analyst Carl Bernstein, who joins us in studio. Carl, great to see you.
Good to be here.
So 1 year in, how do you see it?
Well, certainly we're in the midst of getting deep in the weeds on a sideshow with this memo. It's playing right into Trump's hands. It's not of the greatest consequence.
The Nunes memo and the Democratic rebuttal are all...
What Trump has wanted to do is to turn this into a Democrat versus Republican argument as opposed to being about the conduct of the President of the United States and his family and his campaign and his business associates, and he's succeeding in it, partly because the press is falling for this line and spending all our time debating this memo. It's really a red herring. The real thing that's going on now, you know, people keep looking, and I'm asked all the time, how is this like Watergate? Watergate is not the analogy. The real analogy is Joe McCarthy and Donald Trump. That really what Joseph McCarthy and McCarthyism were about was smearing American institutions for self-political gain. What McCarthy did, he smeared the Department of the Army. He smeared the United States Information Agency, the Voice of America. He accused people of treason, exactly like Donald Trump did the other day. And it's not an accident that McCarthy's handmaiden and enabler was Roy Cohn. And we heard the other day Donald Trump speak of his mentor, Roy Cohn. Where is my Roy Cohn? This is a moment we, including in the press, Fox News, we need to look at history. We need to look at the last great authoritarian demagogue in this country, who was Joe McCarthy, and see if indeed I am right, and this is true, that Donald Trump mimics, re-embodies to a large extent the tactics, techniques, and methodology of Joe McCarthy. The constant smearing of immigrants, of Mexicans, of those he opposes, the belittling of them, little this, little him. Go look at the clips of right. Joe McCarthy.
But, you know, Carl, in the absence of a politician to fill in the role of the have you no decency, sir, role that took place in the McCarthy era, the Nunes memo, while I hear you, there's certainly a political play going on. You also, in the media, can't let them use phrases like, this was a secret court, where they went for their secret warrant. That is a...
All right, well, I hope it didn't flake out there, because Bernstein's about to make a really important point. All right, looks like that, for whatever reason, we've lost access to that.
Can't let them use phrases like, this was a secret court where they went for their secret warrant. That is a legislative body, the FISA court, and they are undermining the DOJ for political purposes. You got to call it out, Carl.
Let's just report the facts. We don't need to engage every time the president does something or his lackeys or acolytes do something. We don't need to turn it into the biggest issue out there that he wants us to turn it. What is the real issue here? The real issue is the conduct of the President of the United States, his family, his business associates, his business organization, and the conduct of the Russians in the election. We have a legitimate investigation. Let it proceed, the Mueller investigation. That's the big question. Why is he trying to cover up and impede the Mueller investigation? That's what, and then use McCarthyite tactics. And the difference between McCarthy and Donald Trump, McCarthy was a senator. We have never had a president of the United States who is an authoritarian demagogue before, who issues these kinds of smears and lies daily. This is extraordinary. We need to look at it as a country. We need to look at our history. Let's see what McCarthy looked like and put up the video next to Donald Trump.
And so, to use your model and for a history lesson for everyone, what happened with McCarthy? How did his adversaries fight back?
Well, first of all, McCarthy was able to carry and scare the hell out of the Republican Party for years, just as we are seeing now, by appealing to the base, by appealing to a base that was frightened, that was alienated, and by demonizing enemies and opponents. Exactly the same thing. And now what happened with McCarthy is eventually the Republican Party and a Republican president of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower, pushed back. But we haven't seen that pushback yet. Incidentally, the most interesting politician in all of the memo craze is Trey Gowdy, because he's saying, this is a sideshow.
He's the only one who's seen the application on that side of the ball.
But again, it's not front and center the real issue. Donald Trump says he really wants to testify.
Right.
Mr. President, overrule your lawyers. Right. Look, if indeed there is no there, please tell us, the investigators, the American people, I'm going in there, open right. hands, let me testify and convince everyone. It's an easy route.
All right, that was Carl Bernstein this morning on CNN. What did you think? Did you agree with him, disagree with him? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Alita writes, no blank parade regarding the possibility of having a massive U.S. military parade on the streets of Washington, D.C. And Adam writes, I find it interesting that Trump wants to spend millions of dollars on a parade for the military when they claim there is already not enough money for the military, writes Adam. Again, Jeff Haynes is our phone producer today. We'll take some phone calls right now on Radioactivity. And let's go to David, who's in Bradenton. Hi, David, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
I just had a comment about the healthcare situation.
Okay.
It's definitely it's a dying situation, and it needs to be fixed. But I wanted to mention something that's happened today at 10 o'clock. It's already over. And then on the 9th at 10 o'clock at WSLR, their sister station in Sarasota, they're having a topic conversation about this upcoming, you know, healthcare summit. And I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir whenever I'm calling WMNF because I'm a WMNFer, and, you know, I don't believe in what Trump's doing. I don't believe that we should have a parade and flex our American muscles.
All right. All right, David. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for telling us about what's going on WSLR. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks,
yeah,
David.
I need to get down there and support.
Okay. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Dan in Seminole. Hi, Dan. What's on your mind?
Well, you threw me for a loop, Rob, with asking for the latest feelings from about Trump. One thing that we have to realize, I think, is when Trump throws these distractions like treason, we have to use that as a tool because it's really he's reflecting on himself. He's putting out this distraction thing. The Democrats and the issues with it, their demo is possibly treasonous, but it's him that's really treasonous. And it's a distraction, and we just have to use that mirror tool.
All right, Dan, thank you. Thank you for your thoughts.
Before, I really wanted to say before that, I was really calling about, I think that we need to, you know, one of the previous callers said, you know, we need to morph the Me Too movement. And I say that that's right. Maybe we need to morph it into the Us Too movement.
Well, you know, and I'll tell you, movements come because people join groups. That's where movements come from. And if a lot of people join a certain group, a lot of people join the Tea Party, and that's what made it a movement. I mean, I think the Koch brothers were able to spend a lot of money on organizers and on Fox News publicity, but also it takes warm bodies to go out there and join it. So if you feel strongly about anything, you should join a group.
Well, last night on PBS, on American Experience, they were talking about the Gilded Age. And it was amazing how much that reflects 110 years ago, exactly almost the same situation that we have now. And there was a third party. I can't remember what the name of the third party was.
Was it the Bull Moose Party back then?
That was not the name that they mentioned last night, but it was unbelievable, the parallels. And we could learn a lot.
Well,
everybody see that.
Yeah, that's good. And a lot of those PBS shows are available online. Dan, thanks for telling us about that show.
Yeah.
All right, great to hear from you. And let's go to Tina in Tampa. Tina, what's on your mind?
Hi, good show. I just want to say my first reaction is, how can the president want to have this, like, North Korea-type expensive million-dollar military display when there are people in this country who cannot afford their medication? I had to order some eye drops from Canada to be able to afford it, and they're right now as of February 1st in customs. Hopefully they'll get through safely. But he wants to, I missed the figure of what he projects it to cost. I think that's just a, what's the word for it, like a subterfuge. It's a way to distract people from, you know, so many, like the things that Carl Bernstein was saying, and I want to add, I think that he was right on, and he what he said was very well put. Hopefully, more people will start to feel that way. I think they are. I think beyond his base, I don't think Trump really has that much support. Thank you.
All right, Tina, thank you. And you are listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa, taking these phone calls as they come in. Let's go to Bill in Port Charlotte. Hi, Bill. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. When I saw that military parade idea,
yeah.
First thing, dictatorship. Another way to identify and compare Trump to, and people don't want to hear a lot of this stuff, Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, a couple more other people, and it's just, the more I look into it, the more mind-boggling it is. I've been reading Scott Peck's book further down the road, The Road Less Traveled.
Road Less Traveled,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and they have way in the back, there's a very short chapter about evil, and we were reading it last night at a book study, and his first point, his second point, halfway through his third point, I said, oh my God, now I understand why Trump is the way he is, and I would suggest for anybody who's listening to try and get a hold of that book and read that small chapter, and it is just, it was eye-opening. And, of course, I was surrounded by four or five Trumpites. So as soon as he was done reading a chapter, one guy said, Democratic Party. I said, oh, my God, and I have to leave.
All right.
For open-minded people on a spiritual journey continue to back and like and believe in Trump, it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
All right, Bill, thank you.
Thanks a lot. I love your show.
Thank you for saying that, too. And let's go to Russell in Tampa. Russell, thank you for calling in. What would you like to say? Hi, Russell. Okay. Russell, you're on.
Great show as always. Listen, Trump is laying another trap, and the progressive liberals are falling right into it. Oh, my God, doing it again.
And the trap being?
Well, all the liberals and progressives are going to be viewed as unpatriotic, hate the military, hate the country, and you're falling right into his trap. He set yet another trap.
But Russell, several listeners have pointed out that the military says it doesn't have any money, or at least that's what Congress says about the military. If the military needs more money, what's it going to cost to put on this parade?
I'm hearing $22 million.
And what's it going to cost to fix the roads after the tanks have traveled up and down the roads here?
Well, I'm sure that's going to be the talk track, but it's $22 million out of a huge, huge budget, and it supposedly comes from a recruitment bucket, and some people will buy that, some people won't. It won't matter to the people that hate Trump. But the trap is that you're going to look anti-American because he's going to do this.
But do you think? I mean, Russell, I know you've called this show dozens of times, and I'm glad you have. But let me ask you this: when we were growing up, and we watched the pictures of the Soviet Union and the parading of the missiles, and the Chinese and the parading of the missiles, and now we watch North Korea and the parading of all their weapons and tank systems. When you were growing up, what did you think about that when you were growing up, Russell? Hey, Russell? All right, so Russell didn't want to answer that question. He hung up himself. So what does that say? Let's go to Joe in St. Pete. Hi, Joe, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yes, I'm catching the end, so I don't put others in. But, you know, people have likened Trump. There are people that are extremists, but I kind of am starting to go along with them. They've likened Trump to people like Hitler and Stalin, and something like this really will give some credibility because it's ridiculous. I've never seen anything like this in this country where people have to have parades when there are people starving, like that lady brought up. People can't afford their medications, and we're spending a fat on AIDS.
Yeah, and I would be surprised if that parade only cost $22 million. If you're going to bring tens of thousands of soldiers and military personnel to Washington, you've got to house them. There's not enough barracks in the D.C. area to house them. And if you're going to bring in all that equipment, it's going to cost far more than $22 million. Plus, you're going to tear up the streets. So, anyway, Joe, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. Great to hear from you. Some of the other people who've emailed here today, here's an email from Chris in Tampa, who says, go Trump. All right. Chris, thank you. And Jim writes, maybe we could be issued uniforms. I mean, Patriot outfits to wear at the parade. What a joke, writes Jim. And here's an email from 813. It says, this is just an example of a country converting into a totalitarian state, and people don't want to see it. They don't want to hear it, and they don't want to know about it, not in my backyard. That's somebody predicting the worst. All right, thank you for that, Anonymous. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comment back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Be sure to be here for more Radioactivity. Stay tuned. Coming up next, NOLA will be here on the Midpoint program. Thanks to Jeff Haynes. He's been our phone producer today. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. And now, the latest news from National Public Radio in Washington.